Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, the Mariners went into the weekend 13-2.
Please.
They came out of the weekend 13-5. The Astros went up there and
that was fun.
Squashed that pesky little rebellion going up on in the Pacific Northwest. Put them back in their place. 13-2, you lose three in a row, you're still in the mix. But I think the Mariners will find the water level that they've been seeking ostensibly all offseason long, which is eventually they're going to suck.
Yeah, their bullpen
They will come back to the pack.
Their bullpen's pretty bad. They got a couple of decent starters, and they've got some pretty good young players, but their bullpen's going to be their undoing.
I think, Rich, and on the flip side of that, you know, Roberto Osuna saves all three games this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You look at this Astros team, and when you think about the last 2 years in the postseason, last season I think they got done in because they ran into a Red Sox team that was destined to win the World Series, A. And B, they were a banged-up team. Correa and Altuve were a fraction of the players they normally are. But
not an excuse, reality.
No, that's the reality, but the bullpen was not great either. They traded for Osuna. Osuna gave up the big home run in the Red Sox series. You know, it was just... it was not good. The year they won the World Series, it was actually much worse at the back end of the bullpen. They had Ken Giles, couldn't get anybody out. I mean, they're cobbling that thing together with Brad Peacock and Charlie Morton and Lance McCullers. Morton out there pitching four innings. You know, it was that might have been A.J. Hinch's greatest feat as a manager, was navigating the bullpen issues back in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I know it's early, but assuming that Osuna and Presley stay healthy and this is who they are, this is an Astros team, Rich, that obviously is going to be in the postseason this year, and now all of a sudden goes in with something they have not had in either of the two postseason runs the last couple of years. Dynamic, powerful, really good back-end pitching with Presley and Osuna. That's really scary if you're one of the other contenders in the American League. That was always the Achilles heel or the kill spot with the Astros in the postseason, was the back end of the bullpen.
Well, like you said, 16 games, still a small-ish sampling, but you couldn't have asked for anything better than what you've gotten out of that bullpen. The bullpen ERA, I believe, is 2.70. If not for Josh James, it would be in the 150s. They've been close to unhittable, whether it's Rondon, Harris, or the 1-2 punch of Presley, Osuna. They've been really, really good, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can maintain that. They're starting to get, like, I mean, could you be more encouraged by what you saw from your co-aces over the weekend as Verlander clearly put up his best outing of the season to date and Cole finally got rewarded and had another dominant start? I mean, the more those guys pitch like that, the less pressure it's going to be. And I think that's part of the success in the early going of the back end of the pitching staff. It's that they've been getting some lights out starting pitching.
They have. When you think about it, those four guys we just named in this little conversation we're having here, Verlander, Cole, Presley, and Osuna, are all four guys that Jeff Luhnow traded for since the tail end of the 2017 season. Trading for Verlander on August 31st at the 11th hour to come here and be the ace to win a World Series. Gerrit Cole last offseason to be the co-ace with Verlander. And then the two bullpen pieces that he traded for before the deadline last year. I mean, honestly, it's one of those things, Rich. Can you imagine if Jeff Luhnow doesn't make those deals? Can you imagine what this team looks like? Now, Dallas Keuchel is probably...
I'd rather not.
Well, as long as we're looking at the butterfly effect, the fact of the matter is they probably would have found somebody else to do those things. Would they be doing them at the level that Osuna and Presley and the two starters are doing it right now? Probably not, because they're all among the best at what they do in the game right now. Dallas Keuchel would probably be a long-term Astro. You know, they would assign him for, you know, probably two-thirds of the money that they ended up giving Verlander, maybe, something like that.
Right.
So there would have been solutions in place, but not solutions in place to where the Astros have such a distinct advantage over everybody else. Two aces, two hammers at the top of the rotation, two hammers at the back end of the bullpen, and what's in between is more than serviceable in most spots. You know, there's still a few guys in the bullpen that scare you a little bit. You brought up James. He's been terrible this year so far. The starting rotation, you know, Peacock's been out of there, but mostly just because of the way the calendar sort of worked out.
Yeah.
Miley's been okay. Colin McHugh's been really, really good. So well, they're a dangerous squad right now.
They've been so gifted, if you will, if that's the right word. We haven't even mentioned Peacock and how good he looked on Friday night in relief. Peacock temporarily moved to the bullpen, and all he does is dominate. And that's a guy also acquired in a deal a couple of years before the ones you're referencing.
Dude, way before. Was
2013, he came from Oakland with Max Stassi.
Was that the Jed Lowry
trade? In 2013, it was the Jed Lowry deal. Okay. That's 6 years ago.
That's really interesting that both those guys are on the roster right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah. Another Stassi guy they traded for who's having obviously a tremendous impact.
I mean, and Lowry's been a good player since they got rid of him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But that's really interesting. I had forgotten that Stassi was part of that deal. But those are two guys that are, you know, they're parts of the 25-man roster right now.
Which made him part of that forgettable 2013 season.
Yeah, I knew he was there for the 2013 season. It was the World Series team. It was Peacock, Keuchel, Altuve, and Marwin, I think, were the
sounds
four
right.
guys. The four horsemen that were here that during
right.
the sucky era.
Yes.
So that's good. If I'm somebody else in the American League, I'm kind of hoping teams line up and kick the Astros around right now. Rich, do you realize when they get done with this road trip, they'll have played 15 of their first 21 games on the road?
That's pretty scary.
Right? So, I mean, they've got six more games left on this road trip, three against Oakland, I think three against Texas.
It's scary. Yes.
Is it Texas
yes,
they
it
play?
Is Texas.
Okay.
It's scary because of what they did in their only homestand this season. They were not
right.
lights out at Minute Maid Park last year. If this is going to be one of those years where they dominate at home, this could be one of the best, if not the best, starts over the first couple of months of the season they've ever had. And you mentioned the guys from 2013. Just in passing here while we're talking about it, Buster Olney tweeting that Dallas Keuchel is open to a good one-year deal.
Buster Olney is tweeting? I'm thinking of Buster Posey.
Buster Olney is tweeting that Keuchel is quote, open to a good one-year deal.
Rich.
The Mets and Padres continue to be mentioned, but still no deal for Dallas Keuchel.
I'm going, why would the Giants catcher be tweeting? That sure is some way to tell your management in San Francisco that they should sign Dallas Keuchel. Buster Olney, not Buster Posey. Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that, well, I don't know. You know, I mean, do we think the Astros have stopped calling Scott Boras to inquire about Dallas Keuchel?
I would. I definitely would. You brought up the point last week that if they sign him now, they lose a compensatory draft pick they get for him when he signs somewhere else.
Right, which is why you're rooting for the Padres and Mets to one of them that's interested to sign Keuchel before the draft in June. That preserves your compensatory pick.
Yeah, so that's the Dallas Keuchel thing, Rich, is one of the weirdest things that I can remember as a baseball fan. A guy who is a
crazy,
more than serviceable starter. A guy who won a Cy Young 4 years ago.
Yeah.
A guy who's been an all-star a couple of times. A guy who, as recently as last year, was at the very least a reliable innings eater.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting at home right now.
It's nuts.
Scott Boras has failed him.
He has. And at this point in the game, as we get closer and closer to the June draft, there's no question that draft compensation is a factor holding up teams from signing Dallas
Keuchel. The closer we get, the bigger it becomes.
These teams are rolling the dice that whatever weakness they have in their rotation can continue to be covered up to a certain extent until they can get him aboard.
And I guess just to explain to
Jason Vargas' ERA in New York is over 14.
Yeah, they could use – there's a lot of teams that could use Dallas Keuchel. He's a good pitcher.
Yeah.
But just the 15-second explanation for what you're talking about for people who don't know, why are you guys bringing up the draft when it comes to Keuchel? If Dallas Keuchel signs with another team, the Astros get a draft pick from that team as compensation unless he signs after the draft in June, and then that goes out the window. So that's why June is such a deadline with this thing, because teams are going to look at it. And if it starts to get into mid-May or late May, Rich, teams are going to be like, we can wait a few weeks, hang on to our draft pick, and we'll sign him afterwards.
And the pick a team gives up varies team by team. It's based on, in part at least, your standing with regard to luxury tax. We had mentioned last week that the Yankees, for instance, because of their history, would have to give up their second pick in the draft, which is 37, which in baseball is a very high pick.
Yep. All right, so the Astros are off today. They've got three with the A's, three with the Rangers. Look, they go 4-2 in those six games, which I think is very much in play, 2 out of 3 in each of those places. I mean, those are two teams that they swept the A's just last week. If they go 4-2, what are they now, Rich? They're 11-5 on the season?
From 2-5 to 11-5.
Okay, so they would be, if they go 4-2 in those six games, they'll be 15-7, and they will have played, 4-2, 11-5, yeah. 15-7, I guess. Yep. And they'll have played 15 of their first 22 games on the road. That's crazy.
It's a pretty good number.
That is nice.
And it's very attainable.
That is nice. Meanwhile, the Rockets kicked off their playoff campaign last night.
They kicked ass.
They did. They did it. They whooped ass on the Utah Jazz, man. I hate to see what the one sports bar in Salt Lake City felt like last night. Do they have sports bars there? Do they have big milk dispensers at the sports bars in Salt Lake City? What are they like out there?
I think there's actual bars. Did you, I can tell you for sure there's actual
when
bars.
You traveled with the team, were you able to find a bar in Salt Lake City?
Yes. There is alcohol in Salt Lake City. Okay. It's not dry.
From your lips to God's ears, I'll believe it when I see it. The theme last night, a lot of James Harden, but also a lot of defense. The Rockets winding up winning by 32 points. And Mike D'Antoni hit the nail on the head. He said, we've been playing great defense for a while now.
We've been doing that for a while now. I don't think it's particularly against them. I just think that, you know, for the last 2 months, since everybody got healthy and locked in and we've had the same rotation, more or less, same guys in that mix that understand exactly what we want to do, we can get better from this. We fouled way too many times and put them on the line. That's something that we have to cure for next game. But it doesn't surprise me that we can defend.
I'm not sure. Like, I'm trying to figure out how somebody can feel worse about this team's chances than last year's team's chances. Now, this year's team, I would say I would feel worse about how far they can go in the playoffs because of when they play the Warriors. But I feel better. I feel as good, maybe even a little bit better about this particular group, this group of players' chances of beating the Warriors than I did last year's group of players.
I do too.
The only difference is in terms of what they don't have that they had last year was Trevor Ariza, and you swap him out and you swap in Daniel House and Kenneth Faried as what, and Austin Rivers too, as what I think is going to be part of. I think we saw the glimpse of what the rotation's going to look like last night.
The other big
that's going to be their bench is those three guys.
Right. The other big thing they didn't have last year was the problem of controlling DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, that's a gigantic factor in this potential Rockets-Warriors matchup. We'll see how it plays out. But, you know, I think most people in a head-to-head between DeMarcus Cousins and Clint Capella would tell you that they take DeMarcus Cousins every time.
Well, Clint's Achilles heel is defending guys like DeMarcus Cousins.
It is, and Clint's limitations are that he doesn't have the offensive game that DeMarcus Cousins has, the versatility in his offensive game. He's a wonderful player. He's an improving player. We love that he's a Rocket, but Cousins could give them yet another advantage in that potential matchup.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, they've got to take care of the Jazz first, but last night was a big step in that direction.
But I still think they're better equipped than last year's team. I agree with your contention.
They're deeper, I think.
There's no doubt. Sean, they had 9 guys that had played before the end of the first quarter last night.
Yeah, and they're a deeper team. I just remember last year's team, Rich, when Chris Paul went down, it wasn't just that Chris Paul went down. It's that Eric Gordon had to be your point guard for about 12 or 13 minutes. It's that Gerald Green was basically your sixth man last year because you had guys that were banged up and hurt other than Chris Paul. Like Luke Mbamute couldn't raise his arms above his shoulders. I think Nene was hurt last year at that time as well. Like Gerald Green was your sixth man. Gerald Green might not see the floor in a series against the Warriors this year.
It's possible.
If D'Antoni decides to shrink the bench a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he played instead of Shumpert last night. That doesn't mean that's going to continue.
No, but I like Gerald Green better than Iman Shumpert right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
I would go with that.
Not a fan of Shumpy's game since he got here. Shot selection, conversion.
Yeah, he's going to D up, though. Much more than Gerald Green is.
Well, yeah, if he's on the floor. We'll see. I mean, he's such a minus offensively right now. It's hard to justify having him out there.
Exactly. Because they're being so effective defensively, they actually don't need him.
Exactly. They've been second in the league since the All-Star break. Now, the team they're playing is first in defense since the All-Star break. The Utah Jazz are a good defensive team. I guess that's what they tell me, but I watched the way they defended James Harden last night, trying to force him to go to his right. Didn't seem to work real well. Here's James Harden on how the Jazz defended him last night.
I'm not surprised at anything. I've seen literally every defense you can possibly see. So it's just a matter of adjusting and, you know, continue to communicate with the guys and, you know, what spots they need to be in. And that's pretty much it.
They watched some Milwaukee film. This is what Milwaukee was doing with Harden when they blew out a couple of weeks ago.
A defense designed to stop you and allow your teammates to get some open looks still allowed him to knock down 11 buckets and score 29 points.
Well, the thing they were doing, Rich, where they were overplaying his left side and playing like almost like at 8 o'clock behind. They were playing like behind him into the left. I'm like, you're giving him the lane. You guys realize he's converting floaters at a career high rate right now. They were just giving him the lane, which allows him either to pull up, throw a floater, or if Rudy Gobert comes at him, just lob the ball to Clint Capella.
And the floater game wasn't as good last night as we've seen it, so he did. He went with option C, what you just mentioned, and came up with 10 assists. So there really isn't a defense that's going to neutralize him, because it's not just about him scoring the ball. It's about so much more and so many other ways he can hurt you. And at the other end, I thought there was a key decision in that game last night as well, and Fagan wrote about this, and you could see it as the game was progressing. Quinn Snyder was so determined to not allow the Rockets get out on breaks that he was dropping guys off when the Rockets took shots as opposed to crashing the boards. And the Rockets, in an area of traditionally weakness for them, dominated the defensive boards.
Yeah. So that was good to see. Just back to what you were saying about Harden, because I want to play this from D'Antoni. I was watching the press conference after the game and saw D'Antoni say this, and he nailed it. Harden is basically like a cyborg that if you throw something at him, it basically takes him one game or two games to figure it out.
To be honest with you, it's not that we improved. Probably we've seen a little bit more often now, and Jane just adjusts to it. It's like he does with everything. They throw something at him, it might get him a little bit, and then he just figures it out, and they don't get him on it anymore. And that's why he's so good offensively. I mean, it makes me smile. It makes me laugh. I mean, he's just so good. I don't know what you do. No, he could have a bad game, and they'll contribute to something. No, it's sometimes humans have bad games, and you're not stopping him. I don't care what you do.
He's like a cyborg, Rich.
Oh, and if he's,
cyborg.
And if he's only going to turn the ball over in almost 33 minutes on the floor, you'll take that in the heartbeat. The Rockets is.
Wait, how many times did he turn it over?
Three times.
Okay.
Did I say that? I meant
you said it turned it over in 33 minutes on the floor. You didn't say how many times.
Three times. Three times in just under 33 minutes. Rockets as a team gave it up 12 times. Jazz only scored 11 points off turnovers. My point is, if you're going to be that efficient with the basketball, then this offense cannot be topped.
You're done. You're done if you're the Jazz.
Unless they're cooked. Handing you a few mistakes on a silver platter to keep you in it, you're done.
Well, and the guy, Rich, to me, the guy on the Jazz who's got the world on his shoulders in this series is Donovan Mitchell. He's playing like it last night. Can you imagine being Donovan Mitchell? You're on a team that's already a little offensively challenged, right? I mean, Gobert is not a guy. He's not on the floor for what he does at both ends. He's on the floor for what he does at one end, and it's not the offensive end. It's not like he plays with a great point guard. Ricky Rubio has holes in his game. Joe Ingles is a specialist. Derek Favors is a defensive player. The crux of what they want to do offensively runs through Donovan Mitchell, and in a series like this, Rich, the weight of the world is on your shoulders to match the greatest scorer that we've seen in basketball in the last 10 years. I can only imagine the pressure that Donovan Mitchell feels out on the floor every night in this series. And like you just said, the guy plays like it right now. He was playing like he was puckered up super duper tight last night.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's the guy who, in this series, you do not want to be Donovan Mitchell, man.
Missed 11 shots last night.
Yeah. It's just that's what Harden can do to you. It's a little like Tiger Woods in a way, right, Rich? I mean, He and Donovan Mitchell's kind of like Koepka and Molinari. Like you're watching what Harden's doing at one end, the greatest to do it over the last 5 or 6 years, and you're feeling like there's pressure on you at the other end to match him because you don't have other guys out there that can match him. The one thing Harden has is not only everything he does, he's actually got some other capable guys out there with him. He has Chris Paul, who's a Hall of Famer. Eric Gordon, who when he's knocking down shots is really, really dangerous. Clint Capella is not Boogie Cousins or anything like that offensively with a low post game, but damn, he's pretty good on the pick and roll, and he's better down there in the low post than he used to be.
Yep.
Mitchell's on an island right now. I mean, he's on an island, and he's got a butter knife in his hand, and Harden's got an Uzi. You know, like he's just totally ill-equipped to deal with the back and forth right now.
So we both picked the Rockets to sweep, right?
I picked him in five. Did you pick him in five?
I picked him in six.
Okay. No, I picked him in five.
No, I'm kidding. I knew what the numbers were, but right now it's looking like a mismatch. It's one game, and I think the Jazz are probably going to hit more shots than they did last night as the series goes on. They could absolutely win a game in Salt Lake City, maybe a couple, but right now, off of last night, it looked like men playing with boys.
They'll win one game in Salt Lake City. The Rockets will win again on Wednesday. The Jazz will either respond with a win and the Rockets will come in with urgency in game four to not want to come back tied, or the Rockets will win game three, know that they can take their foot off the gas pedal a little bit, and then close them out here at home next week.
A closing kick last night was something to see.
It was pretty cool. Yeah, they were up 20 and then they scored the last 12 points of the game. That was pretty sweet.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.